let's go into that, approve the termination benefits. So the overall question is, will Flanner get paid out these performance rights?
You can look at the performance, look how much the company's come on over the past 12 months. The performance rights he was set to be awarded, had he achieved those things, if he was given longer in the role. And I think he's got pretty good grounding for getting a decent payout.
So he'll be taking a good lawyer in with him to negotiate with, to try and get the best outcome for himself.
Well, mate, you've got experience when it comes to negotiating a bit of a pay rise.
Well, like, look, shout out to Flanno. Look, mate, if you do need some, I guess, mentoring in this department.
G'day, ladies and gents and employers. Welcome to a special edition of Life of Mine, where in this episode, we will discuss, is Matty a beneficial asset to have on your mindset?
G'day, Matty Miners. Tuesday, 12th of September. Mate, this is the world. The mining world is lightening up. And tell you what, I'm that excited. I went to the dunny and nearly forgot to wipe my butt on the way back. I just wanted to get back for the news that quickly. That is how excited I am for today.
That's money pretty exciting, miners. Right? It's all happening in the lithium space.
Jesus Christ.
I don't remember seeing activity happening as frequently like this in a specific sector ever.
Mm. I think these are all the hallmarks of an industry, you know, really finding its feet. Obviously, we've had the likes of Pilbara start to make real serious money out of lithium, but this is an industry, you know, a subset of the sector growing, you know, finding its feet on its way to something really, really big.
Mm. We are talking about specifically, boys, prelude to the episode, Delta. Big news out of Delta Lithium.
Big and very good.
Big and very, not probably big and very bad.
Moderate.
Yeah, big and not big and very good for Flanno. And
we've also got some real actual news as opposed to just rumours about Gina to get into as well.
But then there's the speculation as well of the mounting possible lithium huge co.
Yep, and you're going to go into develop as well, aren't you, Matty?
Oh, briefly, they put out an updated study for Woodlawn. And
we'll round off with a bit of predictive discovery.
Bit of predictive in the unpredictive mining news. Mate, boys, partners for today, K-Drill. I wonder, there's not much I haven't said about K-Drill.
No, just tell the audience what they do.
I need
do.
To probably start talking about another person in the business other than Ryan O'Sullivan, because he's been getting messages for personal requests from people to get ore out of the ground with his bare hands.
Yeah.
I saw a LinkedIn post, LinkedIn message. So, mate.
With a beer in hand and a blindfold.
If Ryan's bare hands fail at extracting this ore, you can also use K-Drill's RC drilling equipment to find the ore by more conventional means, should you choose to do so. So, look, up to you. Not saying one way is better than the other, but they are RC drilling experts. Get in touch with them. K-Drill.
All righto. Delta. We've got to start with Delta, right?
Delta.
Big news.
Big news. So Chris dropped before me drive to the city and I got in and you're like, Matty! I thought there was not much going on, but fuck me, there
right.
is.
Why don't we run the Money Miners who haven't seen this one, if any of them haven't, through what's going on. So Chris Ellison and Josh Thurlow, both of MinRes, will join the board of Delta Lithium as non-exec chair and as a non-exec director. So Ellison is obviously the founder of the mining services, come iron ore miner, come lithium miner, MinRes, and Thurlow is the chief exec of lithium. So we've spoken about this in the past. Over the last few months, MinRes have gathered up a 17.44% stake in Delta. They're the largest shareholder in Delta. And
that
as
only happened last week, eh?
Might have been a couple of weeks ago.
It was very, it was that
recent.
Big cross trade.
Yep.
The 90 odd cent one. Yeah.
Yeah. So Delta kept at roughly 400 million trading in the low 70 cent range now, and as you'd sort of naturally expect for a shareholder of such size, they are wanting a board seat, which the company actually, Delta, that is, made a passing comment to in an announcement about a month ago. So Here's the real interesting bit. Those two have coming in have led to the removal of Mr. David Flanagan as the previous chairman now. So James Crosser, he'll act as interim CEO and managing director. He's been with the business since 2020. And there was some noticeable praise of existing globally significant investors in Idemitsu and Waratah Capital. So they are 14.6% and 10.2%.
We had a good chat about Idemitsu recently, didn't
we? I actually got sent a clarification on that. It's Idemitsu.
Idemitsu. Yeah. Oh, it's strange that you're getting pronunciation wrong.
It's strange that you're pronouncing it the same way as JD. Yeah.
Stay in your lane, Matty.
Idemitsu, apparently.
Idemitsu.
To your point, Trav, there was a really interesting detail in the last paragraph of today's announcement, wasn't there?
Yeah, because, you know, for context, the money miners that weren't up to date, Idemitsu basically had previously agreed to vote in relation to a change of control event in line with the board of Delta.
Which was a big home run for Delta.
Yeah, it gave him better defence in the case of hostile M&A. However, that agreement is sort of now null and void, or it's agreed to be sort of revoked now in the context of David Flanagan stepping down and in the context of MinRes now having two seats on that board.
And they try to cushion it by saying that Idemitsu is highly supportive of the company and its strategy. So, I mean, it makes sense. Delta got a 5-person board and Steve Kovac, the Idemitsu Australia CEO, has one of those seats on the board.
There's not much protections you can put in place to protect you against Chris Ellison just walking in and changing everything.
Well, I think it's actually in their interest to have this agreement sort of no longer standing, given the fact that one of the potential change of control parties was MinRes, who now occupy two seats on that board. So you don't want to just hand over your vote to them.
Yes. Okay, let's pick it apart.
Yeah.
Boys, first thoughts on what's going on here. We're going to get right into it.
Why don't we start with MinRes and what their strategy could be? I mean, first up, Why do it this way? Why not a takeover? I think that's an interesting question that they come in, like we've said, with two seats on the board as opposed to just swinging in and taking the company over.
It's really interesting, right? Like, I've been curious to know the last time Chris Ellison's been a non-executive director on a board before. I can't remember it. It doesn't – yeah, I mean, someone might be able to correct me on this one. But
talk about fucking bolstering the board.
Yeah. Because they're bolstering the board and all that sort of stuff, instead of just taking over the company or putting in an offer, they're doing it this way. It sort of gives the impression that potentially, you know, that they have a view of changing the strategy without actually going through a change of control event, which again, I guess, raises the question, well, what could the change of strategy be that they're interested in executing?
So are we agreeing that Thurlow and Ellison going onto the board indicates that MinRes aren't looking to take over Delta because they just would have done that? They're more looking to take control of the company without coughing up the premium. What do you think?
I think a corporate activity between the two is would absolutely still be on the cards. Yeah. Just is it right now is the question I have. Maybe they actually have a view to enact that later down the track and actually in the interim before that's part of the game plan. Maybe do they have a view to pivot the strategy of Delta in the interim? Because Delta was obviously on a fast track to be mining before Christmas and DSO everything. Is that what MinRes want them to do? I'm not sure.
Is there now a conflict, but if they are on the board?
That's what I was going to say.
Can MinRes take them over if they're already on the board?
They can take them out. It does bring about an interesting question, which Delta do try and address in today's announcement. So they're separating the chair and the chief executive's responsibilities after this. So, naturally, conflict of interest questions come about and Delta are doing what they can to address that. But to your point on the takeover, it's still on the table very much. So just obviously the board has to do what's in the interest of Delta shareholders in this case. And on the other side, on MinRes, they're still going to do obviously what's in the interest of those shareholders.
Would there be conflict in Delta gaining funding for a project or a JV from MinRes if MinRes are on the board?
The way to think about it is if at any potential occasion arises where there might be some benefit to one party over, to MinRes over other potential possibilities, then you'd see those related parties not actually vote on those resolutions. Yep. So there are stipulations in the Corporations Act that deal with conflicts, and you'd imagine them to be executed in any sort of arrangements.
Yeah, there's obviously a plan here. So I guess the big question, you said, look, DSO is still on the cards? Possibly no?
So the big line that we'd connected, obviously they'd been speaking about this for a while with Mount Ida, and we'd seen the incentive packages for leadership.
We're going to go right into them later too.
We will. So I think it really does bring about the question, do they still want to do that? I don't have a definitive answer on that one, but you could argue that that's no longer the focus for the business.
Well, I suppose DSO was the short-term cash for Delta, yep, being a smaller company. I wouldn't see MinRes seeing DSO as it's not going to change MinRes much whether they do DSO or not. They would gain more value out of it later on by capturing a higher payability on the lithium. Yeah. But I suppose the one line here that it did stand out, but the question is, right, what is the plans for Mount Ida and Yinnetharra? We've all talked about, I think Mount Ida's 200Ks to Kathleen Valley. I think it's a bit over 300 to Mount Marion. There was the line here, I'll show up here, MinRes, leverage the experience of MinRes for this specific bit, project design and construction and process engineering. So there is, look, that wording doesn't indicate, but looks that constructing a concentrator at one of or both Yinnetharra and Mount Ida is on the table because they are both very isolated.
Yeah, I think Yinnetharra is still a while away from that. Still a lot of drilling and whatnot going on up there. But, I mean, that is the expertise that MinRes are bringing to the table, right?
Very much so. So, yeah, no, it'd be interesting to see if they're just going to take these board controls and shareholder controls and sort of flow it all in their direction or whether takeovers are going to be a thing.
Well, this is the first board seat they've taken on one of these lithium developers. Of course, they've got these minority stakes in heaps, right? But this is the first time they've gone for board representation, and it's not just one, it's two. And it's not just two, it's Chris.
Yes. You wouldn't think he'd have much time on his hands. But yeah, he'd be able to just send someone else in for him, wouldn't he? Like on behalf of. Yeah. Why would Flanagan leave? It didn't say he was removed or anything. He's departing,
stepping down. Wow.
They never would word it that way. And they, they thanked him in the announcement, which is, customary.
They're usually when the ones are like, oh, MDs are departing effective immediately, they're usually the stronger words. There wasn't any of that wording in this one.
Well, Flanagan was heavily incentivized to hang around, right? Mm. I mean, we talked about the performance rights of him and his employees at the business when we had him on our podcast, and they were heavily weighted towards, these huge resources at, the various projects, but also to executing mining before Christmas as well.
Yeah, I'll go through them if you want. Yeah. So he got $6 million when he first joined.
And that was about 12 months ago.
Yeah, so that was they were based on the share price to get to $1, $1.20, $1.50 to $2 million each. Then he got, when he got promoted to executive chairman, he then got another $12 million. So there was $3 million performance rights for a 50 million tonne JORC resource, a $3 million performance rights for a 100 million tonne resource, $2 million for mining operations to commence on or before 31st of December 2023, end of this year, which is DSO. Or is that? Mining operations.
Mining, so just start mining.
Yeah, start it so you don't have to sell it.
Yeah.
And then another $4 million performance rights for the first commercial shipment of DSO to ore spodumene concentrate within 3 years. Yeah. So 18 million. 18 million total.
Yeah, and $6 million to start the DSO operations before the 31st of December this year.
So I guess the reason we're looking at the incentives and everything, because we see Flanagan departing and be like, oh, that doesn't make sense. He was incentivized to stay. We also know at the last meeting that was held to approve some resolutions, there was, the approval of ratifying the shares to Idemitsu. There was also a resolution in relation to approving some termination benefits as well.
I'm so devastated I didn't pick up on it.
Yeah.
Because you look at it now, you look at that resolution, you're like, you could have predicted it, but fuck. Sorry, buddy miners.
So it had 63% of shareholders vote in favour of this one. As you touched on, Trav, approval of termination benefits.
I think you'd imagine MinRes probably voted against that one.
But they didn't have as much of a shareholding.
Yeah, they bought it. They bought it right before the meeting vote.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. Now let's go into that. Approval the termination benefits. So the overall question is, will Flanner get paid out these 18 million performance rights or a portion of them? How does it work? So we've gone through what the performance rights were. And look, it's a big, long, fucking confusing legal document, but pretty much you look at this bit I've highlighted here. It says the amount or value of the benefits is the payout, termination benefit, cannot be ascertained in advance. So we don't know what it is. It is obviously going to be a negotiation between Flanner and Delta now. But you look at what the criteria is for that. There's numerous things that come into account. So I'll read a few. Number of awards held prior to the ceasing of employment. Relevant person's entitlements to awards at the time of cessation. Is that how you say that?
Yep.
Cessation. Circumstances or reasons for the personnel ceasing employment, length of service with the company, any applicable performance measures, the portion of any relevant performance periods for awards that have expired, any other factors that the board determines to be relevant, the manner in which the board exercises its discretions, the market price of the company's shares on the ASX.
I think ultimately, you know, there's a lot of them out there, but I think ultimately you can look at the performance, look how much the company's come on over the past 12 months. The performance rights he was set to be awarded, had he achieved those things, if he was given longer in the role. And I think he's got pretty good grounding for getting a decent payout.
So do you reckon Flanner he'd be taking a good lawyer in with him to negotiate with to try and get the best outcome for himself?
Maybe.
It sounds like it's a negotiation. And will it be disclosed?
I'm curious to know how that works, right? Because like literally on the ASX today, there's an announcement. It's notification of cessation of securities, and it has 16.5 million performance rights have now lapsed because the conditional right to securities conditions have not been met or have become incapable of being satisfied.
So he must have.
So the securities are no longer. They're cancelled.
But that's what this whole resolution was for, to take into account.
Yeah.
And this is how I've interpreted it, but take into account the performance rights that he had and that the termination benefit will be assessed against all of that and all the time.
You're dead right, Maddie. I don't think it's. You know, it's just putting him on a good footing for that discussion he's going
to
have.
That's God, I'd like to reckon, mate. How much would you pay to get in that room for that yarn?
Well, mate, you've got experience when it comes to negotiating a bit of a pay rise.
Well, look, shout out to Flano. Look, mate, if you do need some, mentoring in this department. Look, I've been in the situation, probably just with a couple of less zeros on it, of negotiating remuneration packages. So back in the underground mining days, because I was doing the podcast, so there was a bit of creativity flair. I'm like, you can't just go in and ask for a pay rise. Mm-hmm. I've got to differentiate myself. So I thought it would be a good idea to create a mini podcast episode of why I felt that I was a valuable employee and what should be considered towards my remuneration. And I gave it to my boss at Jundee, and I bet you he will be listening. I thought for Flano's benefit, I thought that I could give him a bit of a template that he could probably use for his negotiations.
Yeah.
I reckon we'll just play it.
G'day, ladies and gents and employers. Welcome to a special edition of Life of Mine, where in this episode we will discuss, is Maddie a beneficial asset to have on your mine site? What does he bring to the table? Now, there's no point Maddie talking about Maddie, so I thought we would take this topic to the workforce. So let's hear what people have to say about Maddie's popularity, for instance.
Yeah, Maddie's a good, I know.
What about the sharing of knowledge.
Maddie's taught me so much on the jumbo. Maddie takes time out of his busy day to mentor me as an engineer.
Maddie taught me how to box diamond. Now I'm a better charge-up operator.
It was very daunting my first day at a mine site, but Maddie took me under his wing and showed me the way.
Let's not forget rig maintenance.
Maddie loves a good greaser. Always stops for his dailies.
If everyone looked after their jumbo like Maddie, we wouldn't need half the fuck fears we got at this fucking place.
Not to mention maximising jumbo utilisation.
The c*** always let out of the fucking hole. It must be doing something.
Oh, how could we forget cross-shift management?
If it wasn't for Maddie keeping an eye on Tucker, there'd be some loose shit going on.
And just to top it off, treating everyone with the respect that they deserve.
Matt is always delightful when he calls up his measures.
I love Matty. He always brings his glasses back in the bar. He's a pleasure to have around camp.
Well, there you go. It seems like it's a home run. Matty is a valuable employee, and all of this information provided today should be taken into account when reviewing Maddie's remuneration package.
Well, look, Flano, I hope that helped you out, mate. Mate, I think I went from 1300 to 1700 or 1800 a shift on the jumbo after that. So, mate, that's
an uplift.
That right podcast there was worth about nearly $100,000 in a year.
Flano, if you want some help putting together your case to get a bit of a residual ride on some of your termination benefits that you think you're owed.
Happy to go with a roving mic through Perth and get some we'll filter out the shit ones for you, Flano, but I'm happy to get some feedback and compile it into a little remuneration template to hand over to Mr. Ellison.
Oh, that's wicked, buddy. I reckon he'll take you up on that offer.
Oh,
love it.
I don't mean any offence by any of that. The fact he's just left the board. I just want to be clear on that. But hey, anyway, well, okay. What's the let's go broad outside of Mount Ida and Yinnetharra here. Right, so I've come out today, the change in substantial holding. Hancock is now, Ms. Georgina Reinhardt, is 7.72% shareholder of Liontown. That was the rumours. It is confirmed. Mr. Ricardinho, let's bloody piece together this fucking lithium Gina Mr. Ellison map together.
Totally.
Of what's going on, and maybe even better to start at, I guess, their historical connections, because they have done a bit together.
They have, and you know, multiple sources are kind of highlighting the historic ways that MinRes and Gina have maybe collaborated or come to agreements in certain corporate dealings in the past. And so let's go through them one by one, because you're 100% right. That's going to be a useful exercise. It started back in November 2021 when there was a logistics agreement between both MinRes and Gina to jointly develop a new iron ore export facility in Port Hedland. Earlier this year, we saw Warrego Energy, you know, they were the hottest M&A asset at that point early in the year. And we saw MinRes sell their stake to Reinhardt at what would have been a realised loss when you factor in all the costs, who as a result was able to outcompete then Strike Energy in a bidding duel for Warrego. So, the fact that the shares were sold from Ellison to Gina in that instance actually maybe facilitated a transaction to be able to occur and Gina to get 100% of that asset. And we know both Chris Ellison's MinRes and Gina's Hancock are shareholders of Delta Lithium. And Dryblower had this wonderful column out yesterday, and he tries to connect all the dots between the two and speculate about a potential joint mega lithium consolidation plan.
Well, because let's talk about Gina. So we just mentioned the Liontown investment. She's also got the JV with Legacy Iron for the Bevan deposits, which is just next to Mount Ida. So she's in that area already. And the thought, and look, we were talking yesterday about what's the logic of Gina being the operator for Liontown. Didn't really make sense. There's not much, I suppose there's iron ore experience and everything, but then I guess, Trav, you mentioned about, you know, doing the thing with MinRes, because that's the, because what, remember MinRes, there was all that talk for a while about MinRes spinning out their lithium business. It seems like that possibility could be coming to fruition, of whether that's like spinning out a bit of a, creating a bigger Western Australian focused lithium business in conjunction with Gina Rinehart. That was what I guess Dryblower was speculating.
Yeah.
Is that starting to form?
Yeah. I'm not sure if Dryblower was as strong on the spin out, but he's definitely talking about a joint consolidation in some respects. And maybe the, you know, these historical dealings where, you know, MinRes might have a good relationship with Gina, maybe that alignment might actually, you know, realize itself in some sort of consolidated aligned master plan here, yep. Maddie. And with all of these dots that we're talking about all pointing in that general direction.
General
totally.
Direction.
Yeah, totally, right? And
that's a good one, eh, Jada?
Five out of ten.
But they it had sort of put to bed the critiques that MinRes got from, I guess, that, remember the investor call where they called out the analysts saying you're predicting negative free cash flow for the next 2 years, like we're doubling the business, like, and the analysts were saying that based on they couldn't see MinRes's balance sheet coping with all the growth projects in iron ore, gas and lithium. Getting Miss Rinehart on board would definitely solve balance sheet issues with the fuckload of cash that she's got.
Yeah, if you did something jointly, there's enhanced capability to fund a lot of the growth that would be in some sort of combined portfolio. You're absolutely right. I think we're going to have to keep putting the question out there. What does this master consolidation plan look like? But the level of activity and the level of interest from, you know, the iron ore magnates as it is in lithium, it's kind of unparalleled, I think, at the moment. So it warrants a lot of interest. And even like, you know, Gina buying these shares in Liontown at $3, is that part of the whole thing because of the link between Albemarle and MinRes as well? How does that relationship all tie up and together? It 100% poses a big question. What's the master plan? I feel like we're just pieces in the chessboard.
There's an interesting comment in relation to that in Hancock's announcement last night, and they said Hancock can contribute to Liontown's future direction alongside other shareholders, including in relation to potential investment opportunities for downstream value add in WA.
So how are we predicting this is going to look? Are we saying that if this all goes to plan, that the owner of Kathleen Valley will be a somewhat JV between Albemarle and Aussie Lithium Co., which is owned by MinRes and Gina Rinehart, and then all of the lithium operating assets of Wodgina, Mount Marion, Mount Ida, Yinnetharra, whatever else they pick up in that district, eventually, is that all going to be run under a Aussie Lithium powerhouse?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
That's what I'm predicting, money miners. That is what's I'm predicting.
Yeah. So the one counter is I find it hard to believe that, you know, Ellison would be sharing, you know, the leadership. So given that, you know, Rinehart would be, you know, definitely needed in terms of capital, perhaps it's viable, but it's not something he's done in the past, is it?
Here's one for you too, guys. Mm. If Gina and Chris were buddies, does Gina popping herself into the Liontown live transaction actually give MinRes more negotiating power with their partner in Albemarle for some of their other negotiations, which are evolving by the day, right?
Well, and is Gina popping in there mean, does that does not necessarily mean that Albemarle would succeed? They could the spin out might take it out, but they'd have to be bloody quick. I don't think they'll spin out a company quicker than 4 weeks.
There'd have to be some mutual agreement with all their stuff. They'll all have to be on the same page to get some mega consolidation over the line, Matty.
Fuck, how good's this? What a great time to be in the mining media industry. Beautiful boys, develop.
Matt, get into it. Woodlawn, updated mine plan.
They have. So I suppose we'll look since we did talk about price deck assumptions with the Chalice chat, these ones are a bit higher than spot. So we know that copper and zinc have been hammered, especially bloody zinc, but they are a bit higher. But look, comes in at a really low capex. So I guess to show what the prices are and the percentage difference, I think copper's only 5% above what it is today that they've put in their price deck of year one. Zinc is 12% above. So it's, yeah. And we're going to get into, I guess, the strategy here, Trav, of there doesn't seem to be a rush to turn this mine on.
Well, that's my inference. It would be speculation though, Matty. Like, just to go back to your point on the financial metrics, like you see the big juicy headline, it's the exceptional IRR of 367%, which is driven by the fact that you've got this low pre-production capex. They call it $32 million bucks pre-production. Max cash down though is $53 million, which would include some of your mining costs before the revenue starts to come in the door. And that's pretty damn low capex when you've got some revenue around the corner, and that drives a high IRR. But that's only facilitated by the fact that you've had all this sunk capex from both develop and prior owner beforehand to facilitate that. And when it comes to your point on what's the strategy with it all, there's one sentence to me which in both the study and the presentation that developer put up today that signals to me they might actually intend to hold off from developing the project just yet. That sentence is, flexible restart timeline means the project is perfectly positioned to maximise its significant financial leverage from the commodity price cycle. Production takes approximately 6 months to come online. So flexible restart timeline, let's
leave it. Optionality, right? Optionality.
Yeah.
Oh, and their decline's 200 metres below the production area. Like they're, and when they choose to turn it on, it's going to be pretty fast. Well set up because of everything they've done.
Yeah, and that sentence gives me the impression that internal thinking is probably leaning towards preserving the option value of the asset and extracting cash flows when commodity prices are more buoyant, which is, an interesting kind of sentence to read. They're up today 6-odd%, I think.
Yeah. And I think the question
granted, they had been beaten up quite a bit since they did the raise and whatnot.
Yeah. I think, look, everyone always asks, is bloody Woodlawn a copper mine? Like, it gets referred to as a copper mine. is it a copper mine or a zinc mine? I thought we'd figure it out. If you go off today's, as I said, the prices are down a bit. I think they year one they've got their copper price at $8,770. It's at $8,300 today. These are US, so it's all down. It is down a bit. Hence why they're not turning the thing on yet. Zinc.
Well, we don't know that. We're speculating.
We are speculating.
Yeah.
The year one for zinc is $2,820 US, and they've got it in at its spot price today is $2,485. So zinc stays pretty smooth, but they do put in their deck that copper rises to $9,500 US a ton. So there's, based on this whole copper thematic in the future years, like if it does go up, they've obviously got a lot of upside in copper. But if you go over, I guess, the year one prices, their average annual output, they said, is 10,000 tonne of copper and 35,000 tonne of zinc. This is where I guess the payabilities come in on concentrates. They're producing a copper concentrate and a zinc concentrate. Now, look, I've been told Aurelia's reported payabilities at their, I think that'd be their peak mine, 97% for copper and 77% for zinc. So if you use these numbers, remember, develop doesn't have any offtake in place or anything, so theirs will be different. If you did go that based on those tonnages, it would be 85 million paid for the copper and 75 million for the zinc. And that obviously goes up, predicted to go up a lot more for copper. So they do make more out of the copper based on those payabilities. So
it's copper mine.
But it is still a lot of bloody zinc. It's not just a copper mine. Totally. So the zinc price, as it's, because it's been absolutely fucking hammered, is still very important to this to this operation. So they've got to obviously a lot still depend. They're waiting for that essential deal to go through.
Well,
that's the big thing as well. Like to see where the, because they've gone a lot quieter.
I'm looking at the combine this whole Woodlawn piece of the puzzle with the develop's recent entrance into lithium by way of that essential metals merger, which is still underway. There's a first court hearing to happen, and then a second one, and the scheme gets implemented. But there's an interesting point to make on the merger between Essential and Develop, which is you know, yet to complete. If you look at the documents, you'll see that Essential shareholders get 6.18 Develop shares for every Essential share. And at the current intraday share prices, Maddie, of 44 cents for Essential and $2.93 for Develop, at that merger ratio, there's actually an implied 7% discounted entry into Develop at the moment by the way of just buying Essential shares right now.
Mm.
There's no such thing as a free lunch. It's not, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as a free lunch in this because, you know, there's deal risk and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, like 7%. It's an intriguing way to get exposure if you were going to buy Develop.
Would you call
anyway.
That an arbitrage? Is it an arbitrage?
It would only be an arbitrage if you owned Develop and you sold your Develop, you bought Essential, but also you had certainty that the deal would ultimately complete and then you adjusted that for time value of money as well.
Yeah, interesting.
You reckon those Essential shareholders are wishing that they accepted the Tianchi deal?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, but I don't know.
Chat about predictive discovery.
Take it away, boys.
I'll go to Guinea. So Predictive came out with a combo of infill and near resource drilling results from their Bankan Gold project. So this one boasts a pretty chunky 5.38 million ounce resource. So some of that resource definition drilling included 40 metres at 5.6 grams from 244 and 53 at 3.3 grams from 89 metres. So they're pretty compelling results. The company's got the scoping study coming up in this calendar year. And they want to get their mining permits in the first half of 2024. So those mining permits are vital. I'm not sure, Matty, if you've seen a map of where Predictive's project sits, but it's in what they call the outer buffer zone of the Upper Niger National Park in Guinea. So
those words national park seem concerning whenever they're in any mining thing.
There is precedent for mines going ahead in these areas. But, you know, it's a key risk, undeniably a key risk to the project. And it sort of brings about the question with a 5.3 million ounce resource, are they a takeover target? 430 million market cap, you know, if you add a sort of standard 30% premium, you're talking over $550 million. So with no security over mining, I just can't see anything going ahead on that front. They need to get those permits before they're a target in my opinion.
It's a wicked resource, right? Like there's no doubt about that. There are a bunch of undeveloped ounces in Africa right now, which screen like super undemanding from a market cap. And this one doesn't scream as undemanding as some of those.
Yeah, agreed. So the next thing that logically comes to mind is the political state of Guinea. So we saw a military junta take control in a coup in 2021. Now, they have de facto leadership of the country, but it's pretty common for operations to just go ahead as usual. The mining and other, you know, extractive and exporting industries are vital to a lot of these countries. So it's pretty standard for mining operations just to continue business as usual through the sort of turbulent geopolitical times.
Do you think a deposit like this, a developed project like this is got more success of coming to fruition in the hands of someone like a Perseus, a bit bigger company with more experience developing in that region, or do you think it's a pretty tough task for Predictive to get it done themselves?
Yeah, I think it'd be a target in the long run, but I also think you've got other like established African gold miners that are not listed on the ASX.
Not a Canadian listed companies.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You know, your B2 Golds of the world. We saw Silvercorp enter into a deal with OreCorp recently. I mean, there's just, established players. You've got Endeavour, a bunch of those miners that we're not as familiar with because we live in Australia, but are big, big players over there.
I mean, a lot of these guys are trading at pretty substantial discounts at the moment. Take WAF and Perseus as an example. On an EV to EBITDA multiple, they're trading at 2.5 to 2.8 times. You compare that with a Capricorn, a Regis, Evolution, Northern Star.
Like the coal companies, Trav.
they're all trading at over six times. So, I mean, the question like to your point there, Maddie, does come, how do you get returns? Because that discount is not something new. And if you're of the opinion that it's not going to lessen, it's going to, you know, maybe lessen slightly, but it's going to be maintained. Whilst these companies are, you know, earning great cash, how do you achieve the returns? Could that be through a buyback? Is that through dividends? Or in the case of a Perseus, like we mentioned, value accretive M&A. That might be the way, in particular in Perseus's case, where I see it happening. You know, WOF do have development risk. They're developing the Kiaka asset. So they've got more risk, so it's perhaps understandable that they're trading at a bit more of a discount. But Perseus, they've got risk distributed across multiple West African countries. They've got heaps of cash. They've got a debt facility. I think value accretive M&A would be something they are looking to do.
I don't mind your idea of a buyback for them. I mean, multiple's been smashed. Mm. I wonder if Perseus internal. I mean, they obviously go for M&A and that's how they create value. But I wonder if they'd internally be thinking, well, our multiple's like super, super low relative to where it's been historically to a buyback.
So they had their, you know, their playbook is getting, you know, assets at an early stage and developing them and getting that re-rate and then cash flow sort of capture. And obviously they had their Sudanese asset, which is, you know, the country's fallen on pretty tough times. So that's completely folded, really. Nothing's happening on that front anymore. So they're kind of at a bit of a crossroads again, looking like where's the next leg of growth coming from. So it'd be interesting to see.
What's Emerald trade at? I know they're Cambodia, aren't they? But what's their
I'm not sure the multiple off the top of my head, but they're a $1.5 billion market cap now, which is, I mean, that's imagine a $1.5 billion market cap for a mine in Cambodia. It's, you know, wicked operators and they're going to try to replicate that same game plan in Western Australia. That feels a bit baked into the price
Do you think African producers like that, like your Perseus's and your WAFs and that, like, do you think if they had an Australian producing operation on their books there, they'd be rated a lot differently from a risk side of things?
I mean, I guess it depends where, you know, what proportion of ounces are coming from where. So I think it would lessen the risk profile. Do I think they should do it? No. Like
Perseus have diversified African risk too. Like keep in mind, it's not like they concentrate their risk in any one country. They're actually, you know, disperse it so that if at any point in time there's some kind of...
There's not going to be three coups at once. Hopefully.
That's a hope.
I mean, but to the previous point, I don't think that's the massive risk, you know. Yeah. That there is the risk of like nationalising an asset, which I don't think is super high in their case. But, you know, as terrible as a coup is in one of these countries, although it's not always, I think the company would argue it's not always that bad. You're getting better leaders come in. That's, you know, getting a bit out of my depth there. But it's not always value destructive for the asset.
So. All right, JD's definitely the African geopolitical man on the podcast. So thanks for your efforts, JD. Boys, great stuff. Great stuff. Love your bloody work.
Fascinating news today, hey?
Ripper episode coming up tomorrow with one of the more enigmatic characters on the buy side.
I think it's an absolute must watch.
Must watch in his first long form one ever done.
How good that we got him on the show.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome.
I reckon it's more of a must watch than the Joe Lowry episode, personally.
He's one, and I will say, he's one of the guys I want to go on holidays with. Love the bloke.
Love it.
Righto, thanks to all the partners. Smek,
anytime.
K-Drill. Anytime, just in case I talked over you, say anytime.
Get Exploration
their,
services.
Anytime, so they get their full value.
Terra Capital.
And JP Search. Thanks for all the partners. Love your work. Uturu Money Miners.
Uturu.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.